A census taker once tried to test me. I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Hero can be anyone, even a man doing something as simple and reassuring as putting a coat around a young boy's shoulders to let him know the world hadn't ended.
Hey, Mr. Rogers.
It's a beautiful day.
You won the gig then.
Remember, you wanted this.
Welcome to Screen Perspectives, a podcast produced by the Pittsburgh Film Office to share how people build successful careers in the screen industry, be it film, TV, streaming, etc. Screen Perspectives was born out of many conversations with industry professionals, sometimes over dinner, sometimes over drinks, and a lot of times driving around looking at the wonderful diversity of locations in the southwestern Pennsylvania region. Thousands of people make their living in the film, TV, streaming business, which is nationally an over $28 billion a year industry. Locally, it is responsible for over $150 million in new money to the southwestern Pennsylvania region's economy. There really is no direct pathway to success in this industry. It's a lot of hard work, networking, and you have to account for a little bit of luck to be successful. The Pittsburgh Film Office is excited to share these amazing individual stories with you, so you can learn how they did it and determine your best path forward. Screen Perspectives is hosted by me, Dawn Keyser, director of the Pittsburgh Film Office, and the incredible Kevin Smith, screenwriter and screenwriting instructor at the University of Pittsburgh. Thank you for joining us. Our guest on today's podcast is a man who has left his mark on the top films from the past 3+ decades, Kakai Ampa. For 35 years, Kakai has been widely considered the top location manager in both television and film. Some noted projects include The Color Purple, Shawshank Redemption, A-Team, White Men Can't Jump, The Soloist, 8 Mile, Mystic River, and Million Dollar Baby. Currently, Kakai works as a director and producer, working on independent projects, and he serves as CEO of Ampa Vision Incorporated. Kakai is also writing and developing feature and short film scripts. He also directed and wrote the short film, Who Are They? And he's in the development of a new miniseries. Please join us, and thanks for listening.
Two things that I want to throw at you, which is kind of interesting. So you've worked with the most notable directors in the history of film. And two things. What did you take from them to incorporate in your work now since you're directing and producing? That's the first part. And I'll let you get to that, and then I'll ask the second question.
Well, I think most of all, I think from Clint Eastwood, you know, how he can do things so simply but get the performances. You know, that it comes out of the performance. He didn't really have, you know, and then how being prepared, you know, because he's doing 2-3 takes tops, basically. And, you know, his call basically was at 9 a.m. and you'd be done by 5 or 6. I can think out of the 6-7 films that I did with him, I can remember the crew maybe on 3 occasions complaining because they had to work 12 hours. You know, you know, and it's very quiet. You don't hear all that rolling, quiet. You know, it's hand signals. It's people have headsets on. They're talking, and it's just how prepared he is, and how preparation, and then the respect that each department gets from him, and how everyone is ready to go. You know, and it's really a family. I have to say, and you know, our politics, his and mine, are not the same politics, right? But we never talk politics. We just talk about the movie. I can't even think of 5 conversations he and I have even had, really. I know at the end of Flags of Our Fathers, because we finished in Chicago, and he said, this was really a tough one, wasn't it? Because, I mean, we were all over the place. We shot Chicago. We shot D.C., we shot Iceland, we shot L.A. But he said, boy, I'm really tired. And I said, yeah, I am too. But it was a great ride. How prepared he is. And usually you finish your film like 2 or 3 days ahead of schedule. And even with the short days. So So that's what I took away from him, is being prepared, you know, knowing what your shots you want to do, stuff like that, or do, and the communication that you have with, you know, your team, and then hopefully with your actors. You just know, I mean, I know that I don't have the Tim Burton thinking. You know what I mean? That's a whole other stratosphere.
Very few people do.
that's a whole other stratosphere, you know. And then Steven, you know, he's got his out there. So, and then there's other directors that I've worked with, you know, some that I don't want to mention that had some stuff hopefully I never do. And but you take something from everybody, you know, good or bad or whatever.
Yeah. My second question comes off of that. So I'm going to play word association with you.
Okay.
I'm going to say a director's name, and I want you to tell me just the first thing that comes to mind.
Okay.
Okay. Let's start with Clint Eastwood with the Mystic River and Million Dollar Baby, Flags of Our Fathers. Clint Eastwood.
Prepared.
Joe Wright, who did The Soloist.
Humanity.
Tim Burton, Mars Attacks, Planet of the Apes.
Creativity.
Frank Darabont, The Shawshank Redemption.
Inward thinking.
Geology is the study of pressure and time. That's all it takes, really.
Wow. Ron Shelton, White Men Can't Jump, the original version, not the one that they're redoing now, that just got redone.
It's going to be more than one word. Writes like real people speak.
Go ahead and walk away. But you missed, and you've been beat, well, not once, but twice by a slow, white, geeky chunk.
Love that. Bull Durham fan myself. James Mangold. Night and day.
A little intense.
Right now, out there on your own, your life expectancy is like here. With me, it's here. Without me, here.
That's good. Peter Seagal, Get Smart.
Very nice.
We also have a new agent, Agent 86.
Who's that, sir?
It's you, Max.
Mm-hmm. Finally, Steven Spielberg, which is The Color Purple, which you mentioned.
I'm trying to think of a word to say. The way he can make his scenes mesh together, his transitions from one scene to another, are fantastic. I don't know a word to say, but if you watch his films, they just flow together. And I mean, I know he doesn't necessarily write them, but in terms of the imagery and how they flow together, his transitions. How's that transition?
There you go.
You a low down dirty dog. That's what's wrong. It's time for me to get away from you and into creation.
We need to go back just a little bit because we didn't talk about his first job.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Let's do that.
We want to talk about the first job because part of why we do this podcast, and Kakaya and I talked about this earlier today, but is to let people in a little bit about the pathways to success and how everyone had a different pathway in this industry and everyone ends up different places because of it. So tell us about, I know the story, but let's share it with everyone else. How you got your first job on a film.
When I came to Hollywood, because my first job was actually working at a PBS affiliate in Minnesota. And it was
because you grew up in Minnesota.
I grew up in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Yep.
And I moved here to LA when I was 27. But at 18, 2 weeks out of high school, I started at a PBS affiliate.
What were you doing there?
Well, I did everything. I operated the camera. We produced. It was a program called Black Voices. The streets were on fire in 1968. Okay.
Yeah.
And the Ford Foundation gave money to affiliates around the country, PBS affiliates, to get more people from the inner city involved with industry. And we had a thing called Black Voices. And part of that was a six-week training program where you learned to operate the cameras, audio, you worked technical directing, producing, floor directing, everything it took to make a TV show. And then after that, we produced 52 one-hour shows, prime time. And each week, each of the people in the group did a different job.
Okay. And how many people were in your group?
Oh, I guess there was about 8 or 10 of us. And,
wow.
Everybody did a different job. And so 1 week I could be a producer, the next week I was the floor director or whatever.
Wow.
And, but it was, And so it's a thing now. We're talking about 1968, 69, okay? Now, and I'm not putting my generation down, but it's not that we were any more skilled than these kids today. But there's no opportunities like that for them now.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm talking about. These kids could go in there and do that. I mean, all of them walk around with a movie studio in their hand, right? Mm. And they could do that now, but these opportunities just aren't there. So by the time we finished that, I knew how to do certain things. Now, let's talk about first job. After that, and there's so much time, I moved to LA, and I go back to being a PA, right? And my first job was on Roots 2 as a PA.
Tell them, say that again.
Wahatko. Dom Jugur Jumag Kunta,
the eldest son,
Kunta,
left the village.
Demna da far doggy, far jagar, sabar.
To make a drum, and that was the last time that he was seen.
My God.
And I got that job because I was stage managing a play at a theater called the Inner City Cultural Center. It was in there at that time. And these two guys came in. They were doing a cattle call for women for Roots 2. One was Stan Margulies, who was the producer, and the other was Ruben Cannon, who was the casting director. And they didn't have a PA or somebody to help them, because they were inside, which was our stage, where we were doing Hamlet, starring Glenn Turman, directed by Ted Lange. And they didn't have somebody to help them, because they were in there at a table, and then to get people in and out, get the women in and out. So they asked me if I would help, because I went there to make sure they weren't going to mess up our stage, but I was going to really meet some real Hollywood people, right? And they said, well, will you help us? And I said, well, yeah. So I had a little podium, and I would get the women in and out, and they said, well, you did a good job. You know, we're going to do this again in 2 weeks with men over at the Ebony Showcase, which was the first black theater in Los Angeles. A guy named Nick Stewart. I'm just giving you a little, since it is.
Yeah, helpful, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And since this is Juneteenth that we're filming this on,
yes.
I'll give you a little black history. So anyway, Nick Stewart had this studio. So in 2 weeks, so then, of course, that first time, I give him my little resume with all my little Minnesota stuff. And I did have a couple of AFI films on there that I had done. I would come out here the 2 years before and come out here and work on AFI films, because that was like grad school to me. So I'd be like the dolly grip and the still photographer and whatever, because, you know, I was getting a feel for Hollywood, and, you know, that's what you do. You know, and if you're not a student or a fellow at AFI, or if you're not at USC Film School or some other film school, I would just recommend, see if you can find out the student films that are being made and see if you can get on their crews, because therefore you can start to learn the business. And the key is learning the business. You don't know maybe what you will wind up doing, but at least you'll get an idea by being on the set. And whatever job you have, I don't care how menial you think it is, it's important to the production. And you do that job like that's the job you want to do. I know you're going to be a big time director, producer, actor, whatever. But while you do that job, you be a PA, you be the best PA you can do. Because there's a saying in the street, game recognizes game, right? Mm-hmm. Well, it's on the set, ambition and talent is recognized by ambition and talent. And when they see a person who's really striving to do something, somebody eventually is going to ask you, well, what do you want to do? You know, and then you start to tell them about what your dreams are ultimately. Don't go around there, well, I'm really a director, but I'm just being a PA. They don't want to hear that. Go over there and take this message or do whatever you got to do and do that. And, you know, and they just want to see your attitude, your work ethic. Be on time. This is to all the people getting in the business. Be on time, which means 15 minutes at least ahead of time, right? And always have a notebook and a pen to take notes. Always take notes. Now, I guess you can do it on your phone or whatever, but people might think you're texting. Take notes. Take notes. That's the biggest thing that I can tell you. On time, take notes. So anyway, I did that, and I went to do another show, stage manager. Now, see, I had never stage managed before either, but I just told him, yeah, I could do it. So I stage managed with a play called Dark of the Moon. It was an Equity show, and I didn't know what I was doing, but I had been in management. So I figured if it's got to do with management, I'll figure it out, you know?
And you did.
And I did. But what happened was the Roots people had already started shooting, so I figured I didn't get the PA job. And then I got this call while we were in rehearsals for the play. The play was called Dark of the Moon. There was a woman named Wren Woods was the star. She had been Dorothy in The Wiz on Broadway. But her understudy was Cheryl Lee Ralph.
Oh,
wow. Yes. This is before Cheryl Lee Ralph does Dream Girls.
Dream Girls. Yep.
And becomes Cheryl Lee Ralph, right?
And is married to Senator Vince Hughes from Philadelphia here in Pennsylvania.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's where this is where that was. Anyway, they call me and say, we kept this position for you for a PA on episode 4, and we have a new person for each episode. Do you want to do it? Now I'm stage managing this play with all these people, but this is what I want to do. I want to do film and television, right? That's what I came out here to do. So I said, yes, I tell them, I got it, but I'm going to try and get out of. So I don't know if they were happy to get rid of me or what, but I went to the producers and said, I got this opportunity. And so I got this job for 4 weeks being a PA on this episode. Well, I wound up working 20 weeks. Oh. And they sent me to Bakersfield to cast extras and did a bunch of stuff. But as a PA, you know, if they told me to go somewhere, I'd already be coming back. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm going to be the best PA they ever saw, you know? And, mm-hmm. and because I had worked with the casting director, that very initial thing, you know, helping them get the women in and out, and the guys in and out, they just told me to go to Bakersfield and cast extras for the scene we want to do. So I go up there. I'd never cast extras before.
By yourself?
By myself. Yeah. So I go up there. I got this little office in a hotel, and I got people coming in. I got my own little – I made up some little code about, you know, 1-star, 2-star. I don't know what it was, but they worked out. And I got the number of people, and they all worked out. So anyway, towards the end of the film, there's a scene where Marlon Brando plays a Nazi in Maryland, and he's only working in the studio, in the set that they built, an interior, but they needed an exterior. And the location manager had already found the exterior that they wanted, but his back went out on him, and he was at home on the floor. So what happened in this community, it was part of Pasadena, an exclusive part of Pasadena, you had to get signatures even to do an establishing shot. And they said, well, here's what we want you to do. We want you to, his name was Don Garrison. So Don Garrison's back got me into locations. So Don was at home on the floor, and he said, call him every day. He'll tell you what to do. So he told me, and do this, do that. And then here's the form you could take up there and get the signatures. So I go up there and I get the signatures, and I come back with this list with all the names on it signed. One of the homes was Stephen Canal. One was Stephen Canal's.
Oh, yeah. Stephen J. Canal. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Who I wound up working with. He signed or he didn't sign?
They looked at me and said, oh, sure, we'll do it. And da, 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 da. So anyway, I came back and get it. So at the end of the show, they got me into the Union, 399.
Teamsters
as a location person. And I was the first Black in the location side of 399 as a location person. That was 1978.
So 10 years. So, you did it all in 10 years.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So the thing is, you know, go in there, do whatever job it is that you can get, learn from that job and do it like that's the one you want to do it. Take notes, be on time. And that's the way you do it. I mean, you know, and there's so many jobs in this business. Every job that there is in the real world, there is in the film industry. From hair, makeup, car repair, now so much more with computers, you know, the whole AI situation, all of that. There's just so many jobs that make up. People realize, I mean, young people in film should really pay attention to the credits and just see how many of the jobs they can identify at the end of a show. What is that? Because all those jobs came into making that film.
That's a great point. Don,
we should have Jen ask a question since this is actually her demographic and target. Jen, do you have a question that since you're fresh out of film production and film and media production at the University of Pittsburgh and now a graduate, you're perfect for asking right now.
Yeah, I do, in fact, have a question. I do want to say first, thank you so much again for joining us. It's an honor to talk to you today. It's already been an amazing conversation to just listen to.
And I've got questions for you, too, after you ask your question.
Wait. I love that.
But my question, actually, it's shifting gears a little bit. Some classmates and I have always thrown around like a joke of, you know, 30 years down the line, we start our own production company. I want to know your inspiration and motivation to be starting your own company. If you're willing to offer.
Well, it's, you know, it's having work, having the background that I had starting at KTCA and having produced and done stuff, that I always wanted to produce material. Always wanted, and I was very politically oriented, you know, about social issues especially. And I wanted to, I've seen some of the product that I've worked on that I wondered, how in the world did they get money for this, you know, or how in the world did they put this person in charge of this stuff, you know? And then you always think you could do better. But then once you have to do it, you understand all the stuff that you didn't have to deal with just by being the location person. You know, you had your world, it had a ton of stuff. But when now you're the producer or you're the director, it's everybody coming at you from every angle, you know, and it, so you understand the weight that goes there. But, you know, again, it's the preparation of putting it together. But I just decided, because I knew that was my passion, was to put projects together or that dealt with subject matter that I wanted to tell, that this is what I wanted to do. You know, some of it is documentary-like, you know, I mean, I guess Make It Happen is more of a how-to, whatever kind of film. I just finished a film. I'll send that to you guys. It's called The Tale of Two Inner Cities, which talks about my beginning, but talks about working at a place called the Inner City Youth League in St. Paul, Minnesota, and the Inner City Cultural Center here in Los Angeles. And it started out to be a 10-minute movie. And now part one, which is just Minnesota, is an hour and 20 minutes.
Wow. Love that.
It's an hour and 20 minutes. So I'll That's send that awesome. To you, and you guys can rate it and give me a rating on it. Okay. But it's just, you know, it's me just making stuff up. You know, I'm not making stuff up, but me just doing, you know, it took me 2.5 years to do this, you know. And it's like, it's not something I'm trying to go to HBO with or Netflix or something. It's really a thank you to my community. But yeah, but that was it. That was the passion, that I always wanted to make my own films and make films. And it took me like 40 years to get to that point in retirement. But then, you know, that's what I did.
That's so cool. Like, it's okay. So cool to see your journey and how, like, it's progressed through all these years and where you are now.
So now my question to you is, tell me about yourself. Where are you from? What did you do before you went to school? I want to know something about you.
I am from Pittsburgh. I am from north of Pittsburgh, and I went to the University of Pittsburgh. I graduated 2 months ago with my film and media studies degree, as well as an English literature degree. And a lot of the things, I'm very much into sound, if you couldn't tell from what we're doing right here. Like, sound has really become my passion. I took a class with an amazing professor at school, audio production. I just found I loved like the whole side of that with film. I love film in general, but sound was really what called out to me, realizing it was such an invisible medium that was something I could help with. I hope that answers your question. I wasn't sure if you wanted
to. Well, it answered my question, but then gives me another question. So in dealing with sound, you know, you have the person who records the sound on the set, and then you get to the various sound people. You get to people who just deal with the dialogue, you get the people who deal with the music. I don't know if what is your goal to, you want to start with trying to do set stuff, or do you want to try and do post sound, or where do you want to go with in the
sound
world?
My end goal, I would love to get on a set and helping with audio on a set. But as of right now, I'm kind of helping out with student films, helping out, getting my foot together in Pittsburgh.
They're going to be looking at you and their eyes are going to be wide and they're going to be sucking it all in. They're going to be like, okay. And but the point is, you see kids that play basketball and you see a kid walking down the street, bouncing the ball, and he's bouncing the ball. Every time he bounces the ball, it's a learning experience. It's a high hand and eye coordination. the ball may hit a crack and take another move, and he has to adjust. Every time you work on a project, every day you do something, you're learning something. Even though it's repetitive from what you did before, you're learning something. You're like that kid with a basketball. And so look at every opportunity, be working on these student films. There are going to be situations that are going to come up where the wind may be blowing and you've got to put something over it to mask that, hide that wind, or you're shooting somewhere. And one thing location people hate is when the sound person turns off the freezers in a restaurant and they forget to turn them back on. So now we got to buy all their stock again from the product. But, you know, you get those hums that you've got to take care of that are happening, the air conditioning or whatever it is. So every opportunity that you have or that you experience is a learning experience, even for you. And your whole thing is what you're going to be learning is working with these kids is how, if you become the sound mixer, you become a mixer on a show, how are you going to handle your crew? The whole thing about this film business is not just knowing your job, but it's also finding out and understanding the politics of filmmaking. Can we get this permit? Can we shut down Venice Beach to build a basketball court for White Men Can't Jump? And all of the merchants are saying, you're going to be doing this over Memorial Weekend and you're going to be killing our business. And how do you get that done? You know, there's battles in each department, no matter what. There's politics in life and there's politics in making movies and there's politics within each department that makes film. So all of this training that you're going to be doing and hurting, that's you're developing your people skills. So you look at it that way and you'll be all right.
Thank you.
I love the ball bouncing analogy. I think the ball bouncing analogy is really.
I love that too. That's a really good analogy. Don, we have another producer named Isaiah Stewart. Don, he's another Pitt grad. And Don had a question from him that he wanted to leave because he was so disappointed he was missing out.
Yeah, he was sad about that. So Isaiah's question today is, it looks like you're a big family-oriented person based on, you know, your social media and things and the fact that you have your son now working as a location manager too. Miles, isn't it?
He's
a key assistant. It's really great. He wanted to know if you had a father figure in your life, and if so, what significance did that person have with all your success? Isaiah's asking this question. He's a football player at Pitt. His father played football, I think is correct as well.
Yes, and he professionally.
So he has these great, I'm going to call him Isaiah dadisms, where he comes in. So there's always some focus about something his dad has said. So I think that's the impetus. I'm putting words in Isaiah's mouth, but it's usually the questions he asks.
I didn't. My actual father committed suicide when I was 10.
I was
fortunate. This is what you'll see when I send you this film. About at 18, I was kind of floundering in high school. But 18 for me, you know, this is the Vietnam War. I became eligible for the draft. You know, everything's going on. Martin Luther King, graduation year, King is killed. Robert Kennedy is killed on graduation night. You know, all of that stuff is going on. And I'll show you that's in this film. But being at inner city, I ran into some people who... A guy named Mahmoud El-Khati was a historian. He talked about African-American history, stuff I didn't know. And then also the director of Inner Cities, his uncle was Gordon Parks. And he would allow him to come and watch him make movies. And Bobby Hickman is his name. He said, well, can I bring Kakai? So I got to go to in 1972 to New York to watch part of the making of the second Shaft movie. And so now this I had already done the TV thing, right? But now I'm on a major motion picture.
Feature film.
And now I'm hooked. This is it. And then I'm watching him be the director and be the boss. You know, it's something to see somebody who looks like you do something.
What an amazing journey. And I have to tell you, I can't wait for this this next version of you and what you're going to be bringing out. And I can't wait to see some of your work on a personal level.
What's been really fun for me, Kakai, is getting to share my friends with my friends, Kevin and Jenny and some of the other ones, because like you and I have known each other for 100 years. Okay. Well, maybe not that long. And I get to hear a lot of the stories and no one else does. And that's why we started the podcast, because we want people to hear the stories. And it's a way to look behind the curtain a little bit, because this industry is so opaque and it's so hard to find your pathway in. And really, so thank you. Thank you for sharing your success. Thank you for sharing your story. I still hope we're going to get you to film here, but if not, I'll hope to see you in LA one day soon. But we so appreciate you taking the time today.
Well, Don and Kevin, thank you. It's been my pleasure, my honor.
You've been listening to episode 23 of Screen Perspectives. Screen Perspectives is hosted by Don Keyser and Kevin Smith, produced and engineered by Max Glider, Isaiah Stewart, and Jennifer Booker. Music by Isaiah Stewart. Special thanks to today's guest, Kakai Ampa, the Pittsburgh Film Office, and to the University of Pittsburgh. Screen Perspectives is a production of the Pittsburgh Film Office.